This is a production of Cornell University.
I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. Kira, if you could start the roll call, please.
Okay. Lila Abed El-Majid.
Here.
Morgan Baker.
Here.
Genevieve Bansal.
Unexcused. Oh, no, I think she's here. Hold on, she's here.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Oh, I can, yeah. Kayla Butler. Carlo Castillo.
Unexcused.
Uchenna Chukwukere.
Here.
Lucy Contreras.
Here.
Annette Gleiberman.
Here.
Sonu Kapoor.
Here.
Mari Lampert.
Excused.
Andrea Miramontes Sereno.
Here.
Estefania Perez.
Here.
Tomas Renning.
Here.
Kate Santa Cruz.
Here.
Mardia Chardo.
Here.
Lucas Smith.
Here.
Claire Templeman.
Here.
Valeria Valencia.
Here.
Noah Watson.
Here.
Salam Waldai.
Here.
Valentina Shu.
Here.
Johan Yuan.
Here.
Raquel Zohar.
Here.
Lucas Zumpano.
Here.
Samuel Z.
Excused.
And Kat Wong.
I'm here. Can we get a count of members present, please?
I have 22 members present.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. All right. 22 members present. The time is 4:50. I'm calling the meeting to order. Let's go ahead with the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayugono of the Cayuga Nation. The Gayugono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayugono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gayugono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. All right, I'm gonna pass it over to EVP Watson for announcements and presentations.
And have Thank you so much.
Yep. Sorry.
Yeah. Kat, why don't you head it off?
Sorry. I was sent a message just to advertise that the Asian and Asian American Center, the A3C, is holding community processing hours for any member of the Cornell community. Anyone is welcome to come talk about current events, what's been happening with COVID, anti-Asian violence and hate crimes. So I think Morgan Baker is going to send the link in the chat. Awesome. Thank you so much, Morgan. That's it.
Thank you, Kat. And now I'm going to pass it off to our student advocate, Annalee, for a quick announcement.
Hi, everyone. This is just like a 2-second announcement. I'm going to put the link in the chat. So I know at the beginning of the year, I talked to you guys a bit about the Title IX reforms with the head of Title IX on campus, which is Laura Regless. So if you didn't know, President Biden just signed into office executive order on guaranteeing an educational environment free from discrimination on the basis of sex, including sexual orientation and gender identity, which basically is a reverse of a lot of the things that were being implemented in the fall, basically. So what Cornell has decided to do is they're extending the review process until August to take feedback from students, faculty members, people in our community who want to talk about like the new implementation of Title IX and how we're going to change those codes. So this is an opportunity for you guys to look up, see some things going on right now. They're also, for the most part, it's reverting back to the way Title IX originally was, but expanding more to represent marginalized backgrounds. So If you guys have any feedback or comments, it's definitely important to send that out to your constituents to make sure basically what happens is going to be the new Title IX policy on campus. So.
Thank you for sharing, Annalie. Next, we have Tomas, who invited in the Dream Team.
Oh, I just had a question for Annalie really quick. How does that affect cases that are currently in progress?
So right now, and I'm not 100% sure, but right now we were, our cases were going through like the review process. So we were using the old system. And so while it was under review, so right now I'm guessing that it's still going to be through the like original system until that final like review from the trustees in August.
Okay, thanks. And yeah, so Dream Team is going to present on ICE and its connections to Cornell. Stella and Marco, you guys can take lead.
Great, thanks, Tomas. I'm going to just share my screen with the presentation.
Hi, my name is Stella and I'm part of Dream Team.
I can't share my screen. Oh, now I can.
Cool. So we're here to talk about our campaign, which is to cut ties from ICE out of Cornell, obviously. We first want to establish a boundary between undocumented and illegal. We would really prefer if you call undocumented immigrants undocumented immigrants and not illegal immigrants, because that is the more politically correct term. So yeah, let's just get into it. So next slide. ICE has a relentless policy, has a crazy history, a brutal policy of raids, deportations, and family separations of immigrants, some of whom are apprehended at the border, some of whom have lived peacefully here in our country for decades before being stripped of their rights and ripped from their families and communities. ICE also has a long and well-documented history of brutality, including raids, deportations, family separations at the border, as well as destruction of families who have lived in our community, in our country for decades. ICE has consistently posed a threat to individuals' civil liberties, including but not limited to the Fourth Amendment's protection against unreasonable searches and seizures, the constitutional guarantee of due process, and the constitutional guarantee of equal protection and freedom from discrimination based on race, ethnicity, and national origin. In 2020, a report conducted by the ACLU, Human Rights Watch, and National Immigrant Justice Center also exposed a wide range of human rights abuses occurring in ICE detention centers, including but not limited to unsanitary living conditions, inadequate or non-existent medical care, indefinite detainment, and general cruel treatment. Also in September 2020, I'm sure many of you heard a whistleblower reveal that ICE had been performing forced and coerced sterilization procedures on immigrants in detention centers.
So I'm going to go into a little bit of the current contracts that Cornell has here on campus. They are, you know, educational and training services with also technological equipment through Palantir and Anduril. Palantir does facial recognition technology. You know, there's that connection. There have been multiple you know, on-campus recruitment events throughout the years here at Cornell, where, you know, companies come here and recruit students, you know, Cornell invites them here, which is very problematic. Well, we have Cornell Tech that also has very close ties with ICE and their relations, so.
So we're here on behalf of Dream Team, which is the immigrant advocacy group on campus. We also have undocumented immigrants and students from mixed families in our group. Wait, can you go back, Marco? Yeah. So to be clear, Cornell has historically invited ICE to participate in on-campus recruitment, has invited ICE-affiliated companies such as Palantir and Anduril to on-campus recruitment events. Cornell Tech has multiple contracts with ICE-affiliated companies for education and training services. Cornell Tech has been suspected of providing facial recognition software to ICE and ICE-affiliated companies, including a recent collaboration with Palantir and Anduril to build fully automated detect and shoot towers at the border, which is really concerning. a little bit more about the undocumented student population on campus. Administration has refused to share the estimated number of undocumented students on campus and claim this to be safety reasons, but they also use this as a counter argument, often claiming that there aren't enough undocumented students at Cornell, so that access to resources aren't too much of a priority. But we assert that even if it's just one undocumented student, that's still one person in disproportionate danger. It ties into dehumanization, thinking as undocumented students as a population or a statistic rather than human beings that deserve an equal opportunity to their access to education. Cornell is a home, so a community of undocumented students, as well as students from mixed families, as well as international students who would be in danger of ICE and CBP if they have trouble with their visas or immigration issues. The president of Johns Hopkins University and R1 University and our peer institution also has stated, but if our school is to live up to its stated values of free intellectual inquiry, human rights, human flourishing, and knowledge for the world, it cannot do so while assisting ICE agents.
Apparently, there's a lot of increased ICE presence due to two large factors. So of course, the Ithaca Airport expansion, increased CBPX presence as well due to being so close to the Canadian border. I think it's around 251 miles from the border, so it's incredibly close, which, you know, calls upon ICE and CBP to be at this airport, which is just outside Cornell, like 3 miles out, so it's incredibly close. And there's currently a lack of just proper student attainment procedure. There's a lack of protocol. There's no from CUPD. There's no there's no proper protocol in place by CUPD. You know, they.
The presence of CBP less than 3 miles from campus totally increases the risk of deportation, detainment, and interactions for all undocumented / DACA and international students, faculty, and staff on campus, as well as the risk of being so close to ICE patrols, like at the border. So what we're asking is for Cornell to abolish all professional, academic, and financial ties with ICE. Cornell, cannot live up to these principles or its motto, any person, any study, while aiding and abetting the U.S. government agencies that oppress, persecute, and deport undocumented community members. We want Cornell students and faculty to refuse to participate in research funded by ICE, and for Cornell administrations and students to boycott and ban recruitment with entities affiliated with ICE. We call on Cornell to abolish all professional, academic, and financial ties with ICE and its affiliates based on this research and the statistics that we've presented here. So that's our first resolution. We're also aiming for Sanctuary Campus at Cornell. This is actually something that we're bringing back and was discussed in 2016, 2017.
It was dismissed by Hunter Rollins at the time was the president, so. We'll see what happens with Martha Pollack. Del, do you want to start this one?
Sure. So the term Sanctuary Campus, it was inspired by the Sanctuary City movement. Sanctuary Campus refers to any college or university that implements policies to protect students, faculty, and staff who are undocumented immigrants. This Sanctuary Campus movement is endorsed by the American Association of University Professors. We have a chapter on campus too, and we work with them too. The actions of Sanctuary Campus do not conflict with their legal obligations, so it is not a federal offense to, for example, refuse admission to ICE officers who do not have a warrant. And other universities and colleges have established themselves as Sanctuary Campuses, including, but not limited to, UPenn, Portland State University, Reed College, Wesleyan, Pitzer, Santa Fe Community College, Swarthmore, Drake, and Connecticut College.
So a little into, you know, Cornell's current position. In 2017, this is the statement that Martha Pollack put out, you know, where she's saying, you know, DACA and undocumented students are supported here on campus, except, you know, to this day, you know, I've been part of Dream Team for a while now, and you know, it's really not there, you know. Truthfully, yeah. It's not there.
We have
I got it.
Go ahead.
We have the CCSUS meetings here on Cornell. It's Cornell Community to Support Undocumented Students. Essentially, it's admin, faculty, staff, and students that get together to talk about these issues, to progress goals and agendas in this aspect. But, you know, Martha has never been to any of these since my time here. And, you know, I think that speaks to these empty sort of statements that are being put out.
Additionally, in 2016 was the first year that Cornell finally allowed DACA students to be considered for financial aid as domestic students, as opposed to international students. We know the price difference. And only recently in 2020, actually 2021, this semester, did Cornell finally allow undocumented students to benefit from domestic financial aid funding pool instead of the international pool. And when we publicized that, we kind of got in trouble. They were like, why? Yeah. But besides the point.
Cornell has yet to update their website with this information too, which is rather problematic as well. It's, you know, yeah.
The Cornell detainment procedure is what worries us mostly. TUPD has no formal protocol. They've disclosed that they have no formal protocol in the event that a student or a member of Cornell community is detained or deported by ICE. The current procedure is also unstructured and unreliable. What we've been told to do as undocumented students is call CUPD, and CUPD will then connect the students to the crisis team. Although we still do not know who's exactly on the crisis team, nor what kind of training they have for deportation protocols. The crisis team's job is then to contact the student's family and professors to let them know they'll be absent for the next couple days. After those couple days, I don't even know. There is no formal legal support for undocumented students attending Cornell University, and CUPD relies on an informal and undisclosed system of communication regarding crisis situations involving ICE or CBP. Whenever we ask, they're like, it's not explicit.
So a couple of, you know, precedents, essentially, these are, you know, other policies at other institutions that, we want to try to, you know, reinforce and bring here, maybe trying to, you know, preventing ICE from coming here without a judicial warrant. You know, we've spoken to the chief, and you know, if they have a judicial warrant, you know, they can still come on campus and, you know, do their thing, which, you know, where's the protection of undocumented students there, you know? Yeah, and refusing to share information, of course, is a big one as well. You know, status,
given FERPA rights.
Facilitating so right now we have this called Undocu Ally training series on campus, which is campus-wide, and it allows faculty and staff to join these to learn more about these issues. Just increasing that knowledge would be incredibly helpful. Anything else?
No, we can keep going. This is one of the most concerning parts. So we have had past incidents at Cornell campus. Well, first of all, Cornell University administration has referred to members of the undocumented community on campus as charity cases. And the former Dean of Students, Vijay Pennicker, asked undocumented organizers, what more do you want? Fostering a toxic school environment. Students have threatened to call ICE on their undocumented peers. Undocumented students at Cornell have been recorded disclosing their status by fellow students with the intent of exposing the undocumented students to the media and the public, which increases the risk of being exposed, detained, or deported by ICE. We also have incidents in Ithaca where even though Ithaca has declared themselves as a sanctuary city, like, there is an ongoing threat of deportation and detainment. An on-duty Thomas County Sheriff's deputy illegally called ICE to report a Mexican man seeking medical attention in 2019. And there were multiple ICE arrests in 1 month in 2018, producing huge fear in the immigrant community in Ithaca and on campus.
So another large effect that Cornell not declaring itself a sanctuary campus is, you know, it has a large effect on student health and lifestyle. You know, just having that imposing thing, have that fear and anxiety and worsening of mental health of students. You know, we have enough with being in school and classes, and to have that extra layer, you know, increases that. So, you know, repression of comfort as well, you know, going out to classes and all of that. And we've had peers, you know, take leaves of absence, you know, due to, you know, these extenuating circumstances and effects on mental health. So it's definitely very needed right now. Yeah.
Yeah, especially as like we found that ICE documents show that for years, even law enforcement in hundreds of jurisdictions nationwide, including major sanctuary cities like Seattle, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, are still feeding information into regional databases that can be viewed by ICE. And New York also ranks fourth in the nation with more than 12,000 deportations as of 2020. So the increased presence of CBP and sustained risk of ICE interactions has contributed to these increased levels of fear, anxiety, and worsening mental health amongst undocumented and even international populations at Cornell. So in conclusion, for this resolution, we believe that Cornell University must commit to fostering a safe and nourishing environment for undocumented students who have been disproportionately affected by establishing a sanctuary campus, but not only just saying it like a title, but putting these implementations, which are already in the works, which are already like agreed upon by administration, we just want it on paper, including like barring ICE officers from campus unless they possess a valid judicial warrant, instructing campus police not to cooperate with ICE or CBP against members of the community when an official judicial warrant is unavailable, refusing to share information about faculty or students' immigration status absent a court order given FERPA rights, implementing a don't ask, don't tell policy on student or faculty immigration status, facilitating UndocuAlly workshops to educate faculty, students, and staff, providing confidential legal support to students with immigration law questions and issues, and establishing an undocumented resource center at Cornell University, overseen by the Associate Director for Student Empowerment and Undocumented DACA Student Support, who is Christian Gonzalez right now. We believe that undocumented students support having a safe physical space on campus. So in order to live up to its motto and its quotes, supporting DACA and undocumented students, Cornell must ensure that undocumented students, faculty, and staff feel safe from detainment and deportation. And our available data and supporting evidence show that college campuses must do more to support undocumented and international students' health, safety, and well-being on campus. Yeah, thank you. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing. I think we have a few people on the participants chat who would like to ask a question. So Andrea, I would like you to go first.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you for the presentation because this is a problem I was not personally aware. I'm international, I don't know. And I really appreciate you bringing up this topic, and I do agree that something should be done. I'm not really familiar with the criterion that ICC uses for deportation. Could you clarify that real quick, please?
Yeah, can you, what are you asking for ICE petition?
The criterion, I personally didn't know that was the criterion they use for deportation. Do they literally just find the people that have are undocumented and deport them? Is that what they do? Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's usually backed by usually judicial warrants. I think, you know, there's judicial warrants, but there's officer warrants. That's something that also comes up. And judicial is definitely the highest. So you can't essentially go against that, unfortunately. But that's why we're trying to seek, a sanctuary campus here to get those.
Right. Because with the officer warrants, we're not legally obligated to follow it. Mm-hmm. But with judicial warrants, we do have to.
Okay, thank you.
Lucas?
Yeah, no, thank you for this awesome presentation. I really do appreciate you just kind of shedding some more light and details on this issue. Just was kind of curious if there's been any involvement yet with the Office of Student Government Relations. I know I see our federal director on here. So just curious if you guys have engaged on the policy side with them at all yet.
So I don't think we have yet, but we have plans to, right?
Yeah, we've been speaking with administration. We have like Cornell Committee to Support Undocumented Students, which is a group of all administration supporting us, but obviously that's not working because we're here talking to you, our peers, asking you to stand by us and support us in solidarity.
Awesome. Yeah, so I just flagged, so yeah, Joseph Mullen, he's on the call, but he's actually the director of federal relations, so tries to focus on some of the stuff. So hopefully, Joseph, you can hear, and yeah, I think he gave a thumbs up. Would be great if you all could get connected, because I think that could be really helpful. Ethan as well. From a local standpoint, I know we have had some discussions with our county legislators about ICE in the facility at the airport. So also know that if we can be of help, reach out to Joe.
Thank you so much, Lucas.
Thank you. Zion?
Yeah, absolutely. So I hopped in a little bit late, so I didn't get to hear everything, but I heard two things about two resolutions. One of them was making a sanctuary city, which I'm pretty aware of a handful of state run colleges doing that. So I think it's completely reasonable that Cornell should do that as well. I was just wondering if you had looked into how, since we're like a state agency, if we're allowed to boycott another state agency, since ICE is also like run federally, since we're both like, I don't know how that works and how it would work specifically with us. Have you seen any like state run schools that get federal funding or state funding that have been able to like boycott another federal agency?
No, we can be the first. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I will say that they actually addressed that in their presentation and mentioned that refusing to allow them to commit essentially unjust search and seizures without a valid judicial warrant is not violating federal law. Nothing that we are asking them to do violates federal law.
Just to clarify, though, that was the part about the sanctuary city that I'm aware other schools do, and I think it's completely reasonable. But mine was the boycotting aspect that I wasn't sure if other schools have done. I'm well aware, like, the search and seizure aspect. I'm pretty sure that's, like, under the sanctuary city or sanctuary school.
Oh, well, on the part of recruitment for boycotting, like, it would be fine because it's students' own agencies. They're the ones being recruited, and like as a private school, we're the ones inviting them to our on-campus recruitment events.
Thank you. Lucy?
Yeah, so first I just wanted to say thank you so much for presenting this. I think it's super important, so I'm really glad that you did this. I admire you all a lot for the work that you do. I just had a question about the resolution itself. I don't see it on the agenda. So is this something that's going to be presented in the future, or what is the plan with that?
Yes, the plan is to present it next week.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lucy. Anybody else? Okay, seeing no other questions, I just want to thank you both, Stella and Marco, for coming. And yeah, I look forward to your resolutions next week. And with that, I'm gonna hand it off to Andrea for her presentation on dining. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So for a little context, since the start of last semester, the freshman representative, we've been working closely with dining, especially because there has been a lot of complaint from our constituents on. Yes, there has been a lot of complaints from our constituents on how dining has operated this semester as opposed to past semesters. Most of the freshmen don't really know how dining used to be like. So we get a lot of complaints of, you know, what our constituents eat and on a day-to-day basis. And I just had some updates that I wanted to run by everybody. So first of all, in one of our earlier meetings, Johan, he raised the point to maybe start a program to like donate BRBs. And I proposed this to Dining a couple of weeks ago, and they basically told me to narrow it down. The BRBs are taxes money. So that would be a fiscal hurdle that we had to get across and really analyze for this to move forward, because it is money that is meant to be used only by the person who purchased the meal plan. And that goes to meal swipes also, which would make the whole donating aspect hard. And that's basically why guest swipes are different, because that is money that you're meant to spend on someone else. So this is pretty unlikely that, you know, it's gonna happen, but if we would want this to move forward, we would have to meet up and like really discuss the financial aspect of this and like fiscal and all that stuff. And then there's also updates regarding sustainability. I guess you guys are all aware that since COVID has started, like there has been, well, especially at the beginning of last semester, there was, COVID safety given to, was prioritized over sustainability. So there was a lot of plastic waste that was generated throughout last semester. There has been some progress in this. So for starters, dining in options now have plates and silverware instead of disposable available, which, you know, cuts down a lot of plastic trash and all that stuff. And also we have made progress in the sense that a lot of plastic containers have been replaced by cardboard. And that was broader at the beginning of last semester. I mean, at the end of last semester. Now the next step would be to ensure that this is an option made everywhere, because not all dining halls provide cardboard containers. Some of them only give out plastics. And so that's something that we have to look into, but that is happening. Now we have other problems with sustainability though. Now that we've tackled plastic containers, our next steps should be to focus on how to reduce the water cup generation, because there's a lot of them, and also disposable cutlery. Because I did some math here, and if you have one set per meal, approximately two meals per day, and 7 days per week, and you know, estimating that like around 1/4 of us undergraduates purchase a meal plan and that eat out every day, we have a ridiculously big amount of, you know, plastic sets being wasted every day. So there needs to be some action done in this sense. And the actions that we have analyzed and that, you know, think make the most sense would be to, in the short term, replace these plastic elements with sustainable counterparts, which is perfectly feasible because Cornell's provider has compostable, you know, equivalents to these materials. So for example, they supply with compostable like fork sets, knives, spoons, and everything. And it is actually on stock. So, you know, that could be perfectly feasible. And the same thing goes for water cups, which are particularly delicate because long story short, water cups they can't really be recycled because they have box inside. So it's not exactly paper, and the lids are also plastic. So they are hard materials to, you know, recycle in the end, and just switching to a compostable counterpart would be a better way to maneuver through that. In the long term though, we should probably look into implementing a zero waste policy, and that could be beneficial in a lot of aspects. That's something we should look into for the long term though, maybe past COVID. But right now, possibly what we should be looking into is decreasing plastic waste by encouraging compostable items, because again, the amount of plastic we're generating is just, it's ridiculous. We can't say that we're a sustainable university and generate this much plastic at the same time. And that is for sustainability. Some of the other problems that Cornell is currently facing with dining would be, the food itself. There have been like improvements with regards to last semester. As you may have seen, there is more variety in the dining halls, and vegan and vegetarian options have also increased. But there's still room for improvement in the taste of food and the options of the food, and especially like in the health component of the food. So there are complaints about excessive sugar and oil in the food, and a pressing, you know, complaint about the lack of fish and breakfast options. And also about a lack of vegan and vegetarian protein. And that has actually, a lot of people are asking for meatless Mondays to be a thing again. So that is something that we're currently looking into. And a quick announcement also is that I received, so I don't know if you remember, but last semester, a point was raised during one of our open microphones to increase halal availability during, throughout Cornell Dining. And I raised this concern to Dining a couple of weeks ago. And they said that from now on, Becker House will be offering halal meals upon request. So if you could please get in touch with your constituent base and, notify them that this is a thing, that would be great. They're also thinking of, since this claim was raised, they're also thinking of implementing a new halal station on West, because currently the only station is in North Star, and people that just want fresh halal, we have to go all the way there. So that is something that's currently being looked into as well. And lastly, I want to ask you guys for feedback, what your opinion on Dining is right now. If you have any questions and comments about any of the things that I commented right now, or if you have more problems that you would want Cornell Dining to know. I would ask if you could please get in touch with your constituent base and notify them that, there are feedback forms available, because one of the concerns of Cornell Dining right now is that students don't know this. And I don't know if you are aware of Cornell Food Trash, the Instagram account, but there's been a lot of spread hate towards Cornell Dining, which I personally do understand. You know, it's not a regular year, and the food is not regular as well. So I do understand. But for them to actually implement change, they need specific advice or specific feedback. So if students could, write down what they really dislike and have something on paper for Dining to look at, this would be the way to do that. And yeah, if you have any thoughts, comments, or ideas on any of the three things that I put up, please. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing, Andrea. I see we have a few questions. So Mardia first.
Hi, thank you so much, Andrea, for your work. I'm really excited to hear about the halal food options. I have actually Becker or Beta, one of those dining halls, and I saw that they had, asked for kosher food options if you wanted it, and I asked for it. And essentially it was food that was pre-prepared and was microwaved, and it was definitely wasn't fresh. That's all I'm saying. So if we do offer halal options, I was wondering if it could be aside the other options. I don't know. So it could be a little bit more appealing. I don't know. That's just a comment I wanted to say. Thank you so much for your work though.
Yeah, of course. So were you asking to increase kosher options as well? Is that what you were saying?
That's not what I was asking, but that's also a great idea. I was just saying that when I requested for the kosher option, it was a microwavable, pre-prepared type of food that wasn't as fresh as the other items in the food that was there.
Okay. Definitely. So long story short, we also talked about kosher while we had this meeting. And apparently for halal and kosher food, you need you need special training for the staff, you need special equipment, you need special suppliers. So there's a lot of special cases that need to be treated. That's why the halal, implementing halal, another halal station on West is going to take a little bit of a long time. And it's apparently more harder for kosher meals. I will tell them that though, that they're not satisfying. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Also North Star already had a halal station previous years before the COVID. So yeah, I don't think it'll be a huge deal for them. They just have to figure out a way to make it fresh and appealing.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you. I'll keep you
up. Layla? Yes, thank you so much, Andrea, for your presentation. I was wondering, so this is something that I was thinking about to be just a bit more sustainable. I know Dining offers reusable containers and silverware, and you have to purchase it and then they wash it for you, or you bring your rinse or whatever and they give you a new one, and it costs money. So I feel like if we were able to take away that money aspect, people, and just give a reusable container to everyone, I feel like that would be a good idea if you wanted to explore that some more.
Thank you for your question, because I forgot to mention that that's something that has been discussed throughout these two semesters in the dining committee. The reason why apparently apparently the reason why they asked for money, like in exchange of these containers, is because they don't want to, like, they don't want people to have something that they don't want to use. So they don't want, you know, excess plastic waste of, you know, people like throwing out these containers. There has been a movement in the committee to sort of make them cheaper. What people don't know, though, is that these are paid with BRBs. So maybe increasing awareness of the fact that this is, you know, BRBs and it's not like real money again, could maybe tackle that. But if you want, we can discuss this further at some point. Yeah, because I do agree that like money is an impediment.
Yep. And just looking at the clock, I'm going to prioritize SA members. Other people, I'm going to ask that you please just like refer your questions to Andrea via email. So Annie, please ask your question.
I'll keep this short. I was just curious because I do understand kind of the purchase aspect, just kind of encourage people to keep bringing it back and reusing, not just buying new ones. Has there been any talk about possibly being like you pay when you get it and then ultimately at the end of the year when you return it, you get the money back? So like you have to put up some money so that they know you're going to keep reusing it, but then you're incentivized to return it at the end of the year and you can get the money back.
That would actually be like some sort of like, I understand what you mean. That would be a really good idea. Also something that has been thought about, and I'll just leave it there. And if anyone wants to comment on it, I'll drop my email in the chat. There has been some talk of just like, instead of having people dropping their containers on site, so like on the dining hall, of having like locations throughout campus so that people can drop them there and don't have to like take them everywhere. The only logistical problem to that would be, so you know, how to like keep track of the people that do have the container and how to make sure that, so for example, say you give out tickets, like how to make sure that people don't falsify, like, you know, make fake tickets. So that's something that is being looked into. But yes, I will also ask that. That's a good idea. Thank you, Annie.
And finally, we have Tomas.
I guess my question is about whether the amount of energy being put into this is worth it, especially like for the reusable things, because a lot of this situation is a product of COVID, which is in a lot of ways a temporary situation. I mean, prior to COVID, we had reusable dishes in all the dining halls. There wasn't waste in that sense. So I guess I'm wondering, like, how much of this is just a product of COVID and we're working around it because this is the world we're living in temporarily? And to what extent, like, are the problems that we're focusing on going to be gone, you know, hopefully by next year?
No, for sure, Thomas. It's actually something that the dining committee says as well. And Brian, the head of the dining committee, raised this point too. I don't know. I just believe that, okay, so with relation to the food, like, I don't know if you have a meal plan, but right now, the students, that's all they eat every day. And we get continuous complaints about how the food generally like makes them feel bad and how, you know, so Cornell cares about mental health. So mental, like food is an important part of mental health. And even if it's just for 1 year, that's 1 year that people have to live through. So I do think that there is a good aspect in like trying to, you know, figure this out. And related to sustainability, I just feel like, you know, if there are a couple of maybe, you know, if they're a reasonable amount, then that's okay. But like, we're a huge university, we're outputting so much stuff. And I just feel like if something can be done, then it's worth looking into it. And I honestly don't think it needs to be that hard. There's definitely a lot of, you know, pushing back from the administration right now, because it deals with COVID safety, but I still think that it might be worth it.
Thank you, Andrea. And seeing no other people on the speakers list, I'm going to move into open microphone. So if any members of the community wish to speak about any issues that are not on our agenda, for this week, please raise your hand and I will call on you. Yep, Lucas.
I'm just curious if there's an update on elections. I guess it's kind of a question, but.
Kat.
I think we so we had the meeting last week where we talked about elections, everything passed. I don't think Patrick is here right now, but to my understanding, the elections calendar has been tentatively published. And yes, Wendy.
So just point of information, we did meet with Patrick yesterday. The calendar is tentatively, it's like 99% ready to go. And at this point, everything will be up and running on Monday.
Thank you.
Wendy has been extremely busy.
Thank you so much for all that you do, Wendy.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for your question, Lucas. And seeing no other questions, I'm going to close the open microphone and hand the meeting back over to Kat.
Thanks so much, EVP Watson. Alrighty. Okay. Thank you all so much for those fantastic presentations. Those are definitely really important things that I'm glad students are working on right now. I'm going to move forward with the approval of the minutes. And also, I would look favorably upon a motion for unanimous consent. I'll allow like 5 seconds to look over the minutes, but unless anyone objects to passing the minutes, I would look favorably upon a motion to approve by unanimous consent.
Motion to approve.
Awesome. Is there a second?
Second.
Thanks so much, y'all. All right. So the minutes have been approved. Let's move forward with our business. Resolution number 33, winter and summer term financial aid. I'm going to invite the co-sponsors to present their resolution, and it's linked in the agenda for folks who can't see it. But for the co-sponsors, the floor is yours. Please present your resolution.
Hi. Yeah. So I'm chair of the Academic Policy Committee and going to present this resolution. You all should have a copy of it, and I'm just going to give a little bit of a gist of what the focus of it is. So this resolution is focused on financial aid, specifically during the winter and summer sessions. So currently during these sessions, need-based financial aid is not given. It's only given through the fall and spring terms. During the winter and summer terms, there's only grant-based aid or work loans. We believe that this impacts lower income students who receive financial aid during the fall and spring terms who won't have this available during the winter and summer terms, especially during COVID-19. The winter and summer terms are often used to lighten workload during normal semesters, help maintain academic progress, and can help be a resume booster. And we believe it's inequitable to not offer financial aid during these terms, essentially making them only available to students that can afford it. And then I'll let Sonu share some more info about what we've been working on.
Thank you, Amanda. So we're working on two main things right now. First, we need to gauge students' needs. And for that, we're collaborating with the communications committee. And a big thank you to Morgan and Gina for helping out. And this will help us make a stronger case with administration as well. And we've also reached out to the financial aid office for their feedback and for also a feasibility analysis, and we're still waiting a response. And if anyone has any questions or comments or would like to co-sponsor, now is a good time.
Awesome. Thank you so much for presenting your resolution and for bringing this to the floor of the assembly. It's definitely super important. Does anybody have any questions, comments, or feedback for the co-sponsors? Please raise your hand. Awesome. Okay. Representative Gleiberman, the floor is yours.
I would be love to add it on as a co-sponsor if that's okay. I think this is a great initiative that's super important, especially now with COVID and people having to take different class loads and needing summer classes.
Awesome. All right. Perfect. Andy, could you formally motion to amend?
I motion to amend resolution 33 to include me and possibly anyone else as a co-sponsor. Awesome. Marty says same, and Morgan. So Noah Watson, Mardia Chardot, Morgan Baker, and Annette Gleiberman, Kate Santa Cruz, Claire Templeman, Raquel Zohar.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the motion.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Is there a second?
Second.
Perfect. Thanks all so much. We're going to vote on that amendment really quickly. Unless anyone has objection, I actually will allow unanimous consent.
Can I also add Serrano and Zumpano?
Who?
Andrea.
Sorry,
Zumpano. Of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Cool. Does anybody object to this amendment? Okay. I'm going to go ahead and pass it by unanimous consent. Thank you all so much. I see you have a hand from Zion again. Please keep it really brief because, again, like we're trying to prioritize SA members for now. But what's your question?
My question just involves credit load. Is there going, like in your proposal, is there going to be like credit minimums or maximums? And how would that work out?
That's something we need to discuss with the financial aid office. We're still waiting for them to get back to us. And we'll figure that out then. I'll keep you posted for sure.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much. Does anyone else have anything else to say? For sponsors, questions? If not, I would look favorably upon a motion to vote.
Motion to vote.
Awesome. Second. There's that. Second. Thank you for the second. I'm going to ask that we all, okay, SA members, please raise your hands in the chat to officially vote on this resolution. If you're raising your hand right now, it means you're voting yes on this resolution. And only SA voting members may vote and raise their hands. And I'm going to close voting in 10 seconds. Still waiting on a couple votes, I see. Actually, that's everyone. I think that's everyone. Okay, 19-0. Did we lose someone? I think we had 22 members previously. Now we have 20. Okay, I'll just say 19-0-1. So correct me if that's wrong. This resolution passes. Thank you so much to the co-sponsors of the resolution. Congratulations. Alrighty, I'm gonna clear everyone's hand, sorry. Okay, there we go. And then we're gonna move forward with resolution 34. I'm gonna invite Noah to chair as I'm the sole co-sponsor of this, sole sponsor of this resolution, and I would like to present.
Yeah, Kat, would you like to start by presenting?
Yeah. Okay, so I have a presentation. Let me share a screen really quickly. Oh, and sorry, the last vote was 20-0-2. I think someone was not voting. Okay. Can everyone see my screen right now? Great. Okay, so this is resolution number 34. It's calling upon Cornell to actionably support the Asian American community. This is general trigger warnings, talking about death, police brutality, shootings, also sexual assault and sexual harassment. Here is a link to the most updated form of the resolution. I've done a little bit of editing since it was first introduced to the agenda. So I'll just later ask for a motion to accept these amendments. And all the amendments that I included last minute are highlighted in green, so you can see. For those of you who aren't aware, 2 days ago, there was a shooting in Atlanta, Georgia. A white man walked into specifically targeted massage parlors that were staffed by Asian American women. And he shot and killed 8 people, 6 of whom were Asian American women. Their names are listed here. So this is a really tragic moment for a lot of folks within the Asian American community across the country. We're seeing a lot of national mourning and a lot of national outcry about how this is just a tipping point of a year of, and a history of anti-Asian violence and hatred that results in murders and assaults and just general violations of Asian American humanity and dignity. So in response to what has happened, I have written a resolution that calls upon Cornell to support the Asian American community at Cornell. And I propose that Cornell accept these demands in several different areas. So one of them is in the area of mental health. This is far larger than just Asian American hate crimes that a lot of students are grieving right now. This goes back to the beginning of the pandemic. It goes back to this past summer with the deaths of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor, and countless others that leave so many students grieving for lives lost. The pandemic, we all probably know someone who has lost a family member or a friend, and that kind of grief doesn't go away easily. Mental health is, increasingly important. We always talk about it. And last year, or the beginning of this year, Cornell released the Mental Health Review final report. And in that report, they included several recommendations, one of which is very basic, but just faculty should be required to attend a mental health training opportunity at the beginning, at every 2 years is the original recommendation. You can see it right here at the bottom of the infographic. So that's a great start, first of all, but it hasn't been implemented at all. The Executive Accountability Committee, which is in charge of charting these recommendations to Cornell, hasn't taken action on these things. And also, it's not enough. I think so many of us know, professors or faculty members who assume that issues of mental health are fixed, with a winter or summer break, or with the start of the new year, or with, the beginning of the new academic year, the pandemic's kind of over, we've gotten used to it, everything's better. That's so not the case. Things change every day. Mental health is going to be increasingly evolving and important forever. So I propose that faculty should be required to attend a mental health training opportunity at the beginning of every academic semester rather than just once every 2 years. There's literally no harm in requiring this beyond faculty giving up like a couple hours out of their year. So that's my first demand. Second is the creation of the Asian American Studies major. This goes back to a history of Asian American advocacy in academia. Cornell's Asian American Studies program was one of the first of its kind to be established in 1987. This came out of a lot of advocacy in general for ethnic studies coming from the civil rights movement, 1969 student protests, all the way up until here we are at Cornell. We only have an Asian American Studies minor. We have in general an Asian American Studies program, but no major. And I think that's a real shame. In 2016, former student assembly leaders and Asian American student activists called for the creation of Asian American Studies major at Cornell, which was ignored by administration. And this is really unfortunate. It's so important to know our history. Like fun fact, I put this in the resolution, but Andrew Dixon White, Ezra Cornell's friend, first president of Cornell, he like hated Asian people. He testified in front of Congress that I am fearful of Asiatics, of Chinese people. He didn't want them attending his school. And that's something I would have only learned in an Asian American Studies program. And it's so important to know that history and not whitewash it. So this calls for Cornell to reconsider the creation of the Asian American Studies major. Also, I've received updates that like the LSP program is also being made into a major. The American Indian Studies program has also been pushing for their program to be made into a major. So all of that is kind of included in this resolution. Next is protecting Asian American women. So it's very hard to miss that out of the 8 people who were targeted and shot and killed by this white man, 6 of them were Asian American women. They worked in massage parlors, which also intersects with the industry of sex work, which means that there is a layer of racialization of the Asian American female body. I could go into the history of this, which I really don't want to because it's very extensive. It goes back centuries of the fetishization, racialization, stereotypes of Asian American as being submissive or childlike. I don't want to go into it, but there are all these stereotypes going around. There is this clear racialization of the victims who were killed. And this also this starts at home. So if you want something to change, if you want to help folks, if you want to help women survivors of sexual assault, if you want to protect Asian Americans who are being consistently targeted, killed, attacked, beaten for months and months for the entire past year, then this is a way you can help. Here I put some stats. Asian American women are 2.3 times more likely to report victimization in accounts of interpersonal violence. This also comes out in Greek life, which I think it's no secret, can often enable sexual assault and sexual harassment. Again, 25% of sexual assault victims are usually sorority members from this one survey. Women in sororities are 74% more likely to experience rape than other college women. I've talked to so many of my female friends who have stated that this is true, this has happened to them. And it's very hard to ignore this. Okay, this is a study from Cornell that basically states, since entering Cornell, 68% of undergraduate women, 50% of undergraduate men report experiencing some form of sexual harassment. In 2017, these went up to 70% for undergraduate women. And then over here, really tellingly, is more than a quarter of undergraduate women reported an experience meeting Cornell's definition of sexual assault since entering Cornell's 25%, 1 in 4. For the majority of that demographic, the most common location for most serious incident of non-consensual sexual contact was an on-campus fraternity house. So this is not saying that all fraternities are responsible for sexual assault or rape. It's just that we're asking for accountability, asking for protections, because Asian American women for sexual assault are encountering these spaces and they're coming out for the worst. They're coming out, suffering from sexual assault or even coming out dead on the other side. Again, issues of gender justice on campus and sexual assault in Greek life spaces all intersect with the mistreatment and racialization of Asian American women. This is also a quick side note, but there is a fraternity that's being allowed back on campus. It's called SAE. It was kicked off of campus several years ago because they killed a student, very similar to It was a hazing incident. And again, this goes back to a long history of hazing and misconduct in Greek life that resulted in actual student deaths. Here you see on the left, Antonatialis's parents. He was a freshman who was killed last year after attending a party, a dirty rush in a Greek like space. Again, here's the history of hazing, sexual assault, everything. So again, SAE specifically, this house is responsible for the death of George Destudines, who died in 2011 from a hazing ritual. Cornell kicked them off of campus, but now they're letting them back on, which should not be allowed. This has been a conversation happening in Greek like spaces already. And this is just to reaffirm that this is inappropriate and it's enabling hazing, killings, and also sexual assault. Like, this is a national nickname. This threat is nationally known as sexual, like nationally nicknamed sexual assault expected. And then lastly, just a quick reminder. So we had this whole disarmament conversation last semester. I'm not eager to bring it up, but this is just a reaffirmation that the police don't protect us. Many of us saw on social media, especially women, that Sarah Everard, who was a woman in the UK, was killed walking home by a police officer. So not just killed by like some random guy creeping on the streets. She was killed by a man who was supposed to protect her. Police do not protect women. Police don't protect Asian American people. This is just, again, one of many incidents where Angelo Quinto, Filipino-American man, Navy veteran, he suffered a head injury. He needed mental health support. He was suffering from paranoia. His family called the police because they thought they would help. And Angelo, his two biggest fear were, like, one, his fear of death, and two, his fear of the police. So his family thought that it would be okay if they called the police, that they would talk him down, but they ended up killing him. So one cop knelt on his neck and the other one held his legs until he suffocated to death. This is another instance of police killing Asian American folks. Christian Hall, 19-year-old Chinese American boy, he was adopted by white parents. He was suffering from a mental health crisis. He was up on the bridge. People think he was, you know, trying to commit suicide or thinking of committing suicide. And he had his hands up. Like, he was asking for help and he was shot 19 times by the police. So this is just a reminder that the police don't protect us, especially even in this incident with the Atlanta shootings. The police captain in charge of the case, police captain Jay Barker, he spoke in a press conference and excused the actions of the killer who killed, again, 8 people and said he was fed up. He just had a really bad day and this is what resulted. And it's no surprise that this same police officer was found to have posted racist images of China and coronavirus on his Facebook page. Again, people in power are the same ones, people in power in police are the same ones who share these racist and deadly sentiments. And again, Cornell's refusal to even consider disarming its police is a statement that Cornell will prioritize the supposed comfort of white students over the literal safety and lives of women, Asian American women, and its Black Indigenous students of color. So, many organizations have expressed support for the Asian American communities, for Asian American students across the country. Here is an email I received earlier today from the SUNY CUNY systems expressing their support for Asian American students condemning anti-Asian violence and hate. So here is the full list of demands. They've been edited slightly. So I added to be more specific about what is expected of the Greek life community. I added this part, which I think is a pretty reasonable demand. Cornell University will require OSFL, the Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life, to review all fraternities, and any fraternity accused of sexual harassment or assault should be placed on probation or have its recognition revoked. Again, that is a very reasonable ask considering the fact that if you don't want this to happen, that means that you think that fraternities who enable sexual assault and harassment to happen should still be allowed to continue, that sexual assaulters should remain on campus, and that they go unpunished. And then for the 8th demand, Cornell University will continue reviewing the legality of disarmament. Obviously that was an issue last semester. So we're just asking them to look at the case again, look at the arguments for disarmament, reconsider it. That's about it. And again, I don't have too many expectations of what will happen, but this is simply asking Cornell to review how they are going to support Asian American students, the Asian American community who is dying across the country. That's all for me now. Again, you can view the resolution Let me put the updated resolution link in the chat if I can find it. But I'm happy to take some questions or comments. And also, I will suggest that we call it straight at 6:30 because I know people have prelims today. It is Thursday. They do that.
Yeah, okay. Thank you so much, Kat. I really appreciate like your presentation. And also, like I recognize the like how heavy these topics can be, especially for people affected.
Thank you.
Kat, so please let me know if anytime you want to like take a recess or like stop taking questions or ask the question. Yeah. So would you like to take questions actually?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, cool. First, I'm going to prioritize SA members. So Claire.
Thank you. And thank you, Kat, for the really informative presentation on a very important topic. I just wanted to ask in case I missed something. In the list of demands, one of them was to consider abolishing all fraternities. Would this include cultural and professional fraternities as well, or is this just social fraternities?
I'm happy to clarify that if folks are interested. Also, I'm happy to take feedback on what is best. I think primarily in mind was IFC, but also like the biggest demand I'm focusing on is the demand following that about sexual assault, because that is the issue close to hand with assault of women of color in these spaces. So if you want me to clarify the abolition language, I'm happy to say, let's say social frats, IFC, I think specifically IFC, if that makes people happy. Thanks, Claire.
Any other SA members? Okay, I'm gonna first call on Zion. Also, I'm gonna keep the time on. I'm gonna do 30 seconds per question just in the interest of time. So Zion.
Yeah, I was just wondering if I can get the reason Martha Pollack stated that she wasn't going to consider the last resolution that was passed. I think it was resolution 30.
Yeah, it's online. So I can send you the link to it because it's a very long response and I'm happy to send you the link. Thanks.
Follow up, has everyone read that response and are they aware?
Zion. If you have to go on the second speaker's list if you want to ask follow-up questions. Thank you. Everest?
All right. Thanks for letting me speak. I'd like to speak as a member of Cornell Brief Life, as the president of my fraternity, and as a Chinese-American man. I think it's regrettable that we're exploiting those who are favoring this bill are exploiting the concerns of Chinese and Asian student population in targeting Greek life. As far as I've experienced, and as far as the Asian members of Greek life that I know have experienced, it's been a very welcoming and hospitable environment for us. It's really defined and made my campus experience better. And I don't see how
Thank you.
Protecting Asian students is related to abolishing Greek life.
Thank you. I just want to recognize that I'm going to ask that people asking questions aren't ascribing false motives to the sponsors of this resolution. But yeah, Kat.
I'm happy to respond. So Everest, thanks so much for your questions and your comments. First of all, how are you going to tell me that I'm exploiting the death of people who are like me, Asian American women, who come into these spaces and come out for the worse and come out dead? Yes, you as an Asian American man may benefit from the privileges and the joys of fraternity life. But that's not the case for a lot of people, okay? It's not the case for a woman. It's not the case for Antonio, who died again. And this is not a politicization of their death. It's a mere statement of things that are happening. And again, this is an issue close to me. These are Asian American women who were killed, who are targeted for this guy's racialization of them. And this goes back to you and what you can do to protect, I'm assuming you're friends with some Asian American woman, what you can do to protect your friends. And if you don't want to take any accountability for that, and if you refuse to accept that Greek life is in some way responsible, if you want to say that I don't know a single man in Greek life who would ever touch or assault or hurt a woman or attack an Asian American woman, then you're going to have to disprove the statistic that 25% of women encounter assault in these Greek life spaces. So if you want to call those women liars, go for it. And again, I made it very clear that what this resolution is asking for is a simple review of fraternity life and, you know, the issue of sexual assault in there. And I think that's something that we can all agree on. This isn't attacking Greek life. It's just noticing and noting that this is an issue that we can all take responsibility for. Thank you, Everest. I'm okay to take a few more questions.
I'm going to call on Annie Gleiberman.
Yeah, so kind of off that, because I know we have to, or I believe we have to make a motion to put in these amendments. So I'm just curious if you would be open to keeping 6, because I think the point you brought up of having the Office of OSFL doing review is, I totally agree with you there, but possibly just removing 5, because if you're gonna, like, you just have both there, and I feel like those are, like, if you're gonna, I feel like the first step is to kind of make sure your fraternities accused of sexual harassment are being reviewed, because I also don't think it's necessarily fair to get rid of all, for like, have Cornell consider getting rid of all fraternities on campus. So I was wondering, and I would be happy to make that amendment to approve all of your changes in green, but just get rid of number 5 and possibly have that being discussed later, because I think it is something that could possibly come up for a topic another time, a larger discussion around that.
Sure, Annie. Thank you for that recommendation. I'm going to consider your amendment after I hear from the rest of the folks here. If you want to amend, motion to make the amendment after we hear from everyone else. And then I'll see if I'm willing to accept that as the sponsor. Thank you.
Okay, we have Johan.
Yeah. I know people have different opinions on, you know, fraternities, and we do have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, at some previous instances, the fraternity system does unfortunately inflict harm to the community. But I think what is more important now is how we can, as assembly, swiftly pass a resolution to support Asian American communities, or not just Asian American, just Asian communities in general. And the least thing I want to see is people disagreeing on whether they want to, you know, add language of banning the fraternities or not banning the fraternities, that they will vote no on this resolution. I think the recommendation of either banning or not banning a fraternity should be a separate resolution that should be involving a much bigger conversation and a much longer conversation. So I support Annie's suggestion of removing that, but I will also suggest to ask Cornell himself, just say totally banning the fraternity. I will ask Cornell, say, is it possible to, you know, increase review on fraternity policies, you know, to make sure that the fraternity system is, you know, fair and safe for everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Johan. My Wi-Fi kicked me out into the middle of that, but I caught the ending, which I think is proposing that Cornell review fraternity policies better. I'm happy to hear your official amendment if you want to send language in the chat, then I can review it. Thanks, Johan.
Sure, thanks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just also want to remind people that they can write their own resolutions regarding this, should they see fit. And yes. With that, Layla?
Please feel free.
Thank you so much, Kat, for the presentation and the resolution. I guess I just wanted to just clarify on what I'm understanding from Kat's presentation. So it's very easy to be like removed from a bunch of national news because it's not happening to you. And it's always easy to just say we're politicizing things or doing like exploiting the deaths of people to just further political agendas or whatever it was. But as Kat said, it starts at home. So what can we do for the people who died? Maybe like raise money for their families, raise money for a bunch of other organizations that are trying to support Asian American youth and Asian American women in general. And what we as college students can do is to protect our own Asian American women on campus and our BIPOC women on campus. And to do that, these are the steps that Kat has outlined. So these are just the bare minimum. Also asking to separate the resolution, to ask Cornell, beg them for a crumb to review fraternities, which is what they should already be doing. I was surprised when I learned that they don't even do that. Like, this is the bare minimum, as Kat said. And in order to support our own students, we should be advocating for them. And instead of burdening another Asian American woman to do the work for us, which is what Kat has been doing.
Thank you, Layla. Lucas?
Yeah, so definitely appreciate you bringing this resolution in such a short time frame. Turning it around, I think, is especially appreciated by all members of the assembly. I agree off the start, I guess, with Annie's recommendation of striking the fifth request, I guess, certainly recognizing there's a lot of members of the Greek community here. That results in this resolution being less contentious. Even so, I guess, also thinking about a perspective from Greek life, I think if we were to even go ahead with five still in, I don't think we're doing a disservice. I think we just know the way the administration acts. And even if five is in there, Greek life isn't going to be abolished tomorrow, you know, or even by the end of the semester. I think that we can agree on that. So, I, as a member of Greek life who sees the value in it, I don't see the abolish Greek life necessarily as a direct threat. I think that it certainly is a challenge that we need to do better. So if anything, I hope that puts the extra emphasis on getting a review process. So just my thoughts on that. Thank you.
Lucas, thank you so much for your comments. I seriously appreciate them. And of course, I seriously value your perspective coming from Greek life. I think, again, these conversations on Greek life have been happening for years, decades. I'm not presumptuous enough to assume that this resolution will change all that much or, you know, abolish Greek life suddenly tomorrow. Again, this is a challenge for us to do better to support Asian American women who are being hurt. So thank you, Lucas.
And finally, we have Josh.
Hello. I'm also here just from IFC. I figured I would give a couple of points of clarification. But first of all, I would like to say that I do like a lot of these resolutions. The events in Atlanta were certainly terrible. And I am very happy that we are jumping on it so quickly to help prevent future things from happening. And I will voice my support to, I think it was Annie, and I'm not sure who was after him or after her, but just in kind of saying that it's not at this point really making sense to go ahead with an abolitionist argument towards fraternities. I think that it is a much better idea to work on consensual stuff. We already are having like consent training. I believe it's once a year. We could up that to twice a year, like once every semester by bringing that to Cornell. Cornell also does take Title IX accusations pretty seriously if they get brought up, but I do think that a review process would be very welcome, you know, just every year kind of going through, making sure that fraternities aren't slipping through the cracks and that we're being held to account. But again, I don't think that the abolitionist thing is quite necessary.
Thanks so much, Josh, for your feedback. And I sincerely appreciate your support for the review process. Again, we agree that's really important. I do have a question as to why this abolition framework isn't the way to go, I think, as you keep saying. So again, frats historically enable and create spaces for assaulters to get away with it. And they close ranks and you know, they hurt women. So again, a review process is important, but it's just going to look at the stuff that is happening and will continue to happen. It's going to keep reviewing sexual assault that's going to continue happening in these spaces. And again, like, I don't think that abolition is going to happen tomorrow or this semester or by the time I graduate. I think it's okay to put that challenge out there. And I definitely appreciate your concerns that like, that's not the way to go. This is my resolution. And I think I'm going to keep it actually.
Uche?
Yep. Yeah, so I really want to thank you, Kat, for like bringing forth this resolution. And I also just want to express my support for, you know, really having this conversation about abolishing Greek life, because if we're being completely honest, like Greek life on campus has far outweighed the good, if we're being completely honest. And like, especially seeing from like recent events, it's pretty disgusting, right? And I'm speaking to someone who's in Greek life. I'm president of the Multicultural Greek and Fraternal Council. And it's honestly really disgusting when I constantly have to, you know, open up my phone and see, you know, how fucked up the fraternities are doing on campus, right? And hurting other people, inflicting harm upon other people, especially people from communities of color, marginalized communities. And so I think the conversation about abolishment really should happen. I personally would like to see it, you know, stay in the resolution, but if it needs to come as a separate resolution, that's fine too. But I just wanted to support, express my support for that, just because I, you know, it's very frustrating to kind of see, you know, a lot of members of Greek life, especially from IFC, coming on this call, trying to defend Greek life and excusing or not really acknowledging and doing the real work to actually change their chapters. But honestly, I think the, you know, the larger issue is, like, I think that Greek life is a system, is an institution that really can't be reformed and should probably be abolished at some point. So.
Tomas?
Yeah, I just want to start by thanking Kat for doing this, because I know this is a lot of emotional labor for you to even be sitting here and listening to all these people try to invalidate your experiences. I just want to say, I think the Greek life folks who are here should really reflect on why you're so quick to defend yourselves and how great Greek life has been for you, yet you stay real silent on sexual assault expected coming back to campus, or Antonio's death and how the frat closed ranks so that they couldn't do a proper investigation, or the fact that a Black man died in 2011 and that frat is being allowed to come back on campus. Y'all have nothing to say about that, but you guys get consent training. Clearly it's not working, right? When the majority of assaults on campus are happening in Greek life spaces. I mean, like, do you realize how, like, the amount of spaces that we occupy on a campus, right? There are dorms, there are campus buildings, there's off-campus facilities, there are apartments, and the majority, as in over 50% of things, of these cases are happening in your spaces. Like, y'all should be embarrassed to be affiliated with these things. Like, it's embarrassing. I would be embarrassed. So, I mean, if y'all want to keep repping letters because it'll help you get a job at Goldman Sachs, then, and that's the only way you can make friends because those are the only brothers you'll ever have, I'm really sorry to hear that. But it really is embarrassing that y'all would claim that over the first thing you should have said was, yeah, I actually agree that sexual assault expected should not be allowed back on campus because they killed a freshman, killed him.
Motion to vote.
Second.
Okay, is there any dissent? Okay, Annie, state your dissent.
Amendments that even the ones Kat proposed have not been voted on yet.
Okay, so we're going to move into...
Okay, I take away my dissent. Okay. My motion. We can vote on the amendments, yeah.
Kat, would you like to motion the amendments?
Sure. So just a reiteration of Robert's rules, technically we're only supposed to amend like one item at a time. So I'm going to, I need to find my resolution really fast. Okay, there's a couple of just like green lines. So like line 34, line 115, and line 168 through 175, those are all just whereas clauses. So I'm gonna ask for a motion to amend those specific lines just to approve all the edited whereas clauses.
Is there motion a second?
Second.
Okay, actually, I'm going to ask for a motion to approve these by unanimous consent.
Second, or motion to approve by unanimous consent.
Second.
Okay, cool. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, they have been approved and added to the resolution. Any other motions for amendments?
Motion to amend.
Oh, I was going to amend, motion to amend to add number six, demand number six. Sorry, did I miss something?
Okay. Yeah, let's just move ahead with Kat's first, if that's okay. I'm going to ask for a motion to approve by unanimous consent.
Motion to approve by unanimous consent.
Okay.
Perfect. Okay, is there any dissent?
Point of order.
What's up, Johan? We're in the middle of a motion, actually, so we're going to follow this one through first.
Oh, sorry, just make sure the motion is for voting on the resolution or voting on the amendments?
It's amendment to add demand number six. So we're going through item by item to make specific individual amendments like I think you wanted.
I see. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Seeing no dissent, I'm just going to approve this as well. Any other amendments?
And then I'm not going to personally make the amendment because this is my resolution. And for the amendment to pass, if someone else were to propose it, it require majority vote, just Robert's rules.
Yeah, so I motion to remove lines 193 to 194.
Just to clarify, is that demand number 5?
Yes, that's demand number 5.
Okay. Is there a second?
Actually, can I motion to amend at the same spot, but like just different language? I don't know the legality of that, so I'm just asking.
Yeah, Johan, we're in the middle of a motion again.
Apologize.
Yep. Annie, do you retract your motion? Retract it?
No, I don't retract it.
Okay. Okay.
If there's no second, then the amendment cannot go forward.
Okay.
Yeah, but also I do want to recognize Johan's, I think he's, oh, sorry, I missed this earlier, but he did send more language that I am actually happy to add. I'll put this in the full chat. Here we go. So I think this we can make this another separate
another sorry, separate I'm going to remove my motion to vote. I didn't get a chance to read this.
But oh, sure, yes.
I removed my motion and I motioned to add replace demand 5 with Johan's language, which he put in the chat for everyone mm-hmm. to read.
Is there a second? Yes, Kat.
Second?
I second that as well.
Dissent.
Yeah, Kat, what were you saying?
Really quick dissent. So that was not my intention. So by putting this language in the chat, I meant adding it as a separate demand because I think it's important. And thank you, Johan.
So the motion is to replace, Annie's motion is to replace.
Correct. Yeah, my motion okay. is to replace demand 5 with the one gotcha. That was put in the chat.
Got it, thank you, Annie. Okay, cool. So we're gonna move into a vote to vote on this. Yeah, so please vote using your reaction. So raise your hand if you want to move into a vote on this amendment. Okay, everybody please vote. Clock's ticking.
Also, I think Jacob's hand is up for a question and he's also not a voting member.
Yep.
Also because just to clarify the voting process, like the no's aren't official votes. No, you're going to have to ask after people have put their hands up in favor of this amendment, you're going to ask people to put their hands up against this amendment because the notes aren't like official.
Johan just sent me a message. Oh, yes.
So we're in a vote to vote right now, right? On whether or not we should vote on this amendment. So I only have 8-9 votes on here. So can everybody please cast their votes using the reaction, the raise hand?
Can we please clarify the amendment one more time?
So
right now it says Cornell University will consider abolishing fraternities on campus to protect women survivors of sexual assault. I am saying moving to replace that with request Cornell University review policies and reform over the fraternity system to make sure these policies would protect the Cornell community, especially Asians and other vulnerable communities. So that's what I'm motioning for. I'm motioning to replace having Cornell abolish fraternities with having Cornell review and reforms of fraternities to make sure they protect the Cornell community, especially Asians and other vulnerable communities.
Thank you, Annie. And I have a direct message from Johan. Would you like to address what you messaged to me? Sorry, we're in voting, so we can do that after. Well, okay.
Okay. Does anyone retract their dissent? Kat, do you retract your... Wait, I keep saying retract. Your dissent.
Now we're in a motion. So we're in a vote to vote. I dissented, which means that's why we're doing the vote to vote. For us to continue to vote on this amendment, you guys need to reach a majority threshold, which you do not have right now, as there are only 8 hands up. So technically, and again, only 8 are voting in favor of this amendment. So technically, this amendment does fail. But I'm willing to consider, that the vote's over basically. But I did receive a message from Johan who is also proposing additional language in regards to the clause and amendment that Annie proposed that I'm also willing to hear right now.
Okay, so this amendment fails.
And then as a sponsor, I'd like to invite Johan to Okay, cool. Thank you. I actually appreciate this. I'm going to send in the chat. So this is what Johan is suggesting. So this would be similar to what Annie just tried to do, but it would just be replacing clause 5. And this includes language about including reform or disband, which again, there's no language of abolition. So we're avoiding that abolitionist framework that I think some people are afraid of. But again, this is at the heart of what the abolition language is trying to do. I am happy to accept this amendment as the sponsor. I don't think, unless you guys want to vote on it, I don't know if we have to. Or we probably should vote on it just to be safe. So again, to clarify, this would be replacing clause 5 for demand number 5.
Okay, is there a motion to accept this amendment?
Motion. Yep. Motion to accept this amendment.
Thank you, Kate.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Cool. Dissent. Sorry. I don't know what or et cetera means. I feel like if we are going through with something, it should be very specific. So reform or disband or et cetera, what is et cetera? Like give awards, I don't know.
Yeah, if someone would like to clarify the language, that would actually be really helpful too.
I actually think if we're going progressively, it should be reform, disband or abolish, right? Like if it can't be reformed, which I mean, it's shown it hasn't, but let's say y'all want to try again, then it should be abolished, because at that point you got your argument that you guys can do better is clearly not true. So I think even if you're defending Greek life, you can agree that if it cannot be reformed, then it should be abolished, unless you feel that we should continue allowing such a large number of women to be assaulted on this campus.
Thank you, Tomas. And just to, and like, again, this isn't jumping straight to abolish, this is including the language of abolishment so that it is in there for the future if Cornell ever chooses to consider it. But again, first steps is reform, review. I think I'm happy with this language. If we wanna clarify, et cetera, can mean abolish. Johan, are you okay with adding that to your amendment?
Yeah, sorry. The reason I add et cetera there is I'm actually sitting in my car and I really can't think of, you know, in 10 seconds, other policies that mm-hmm. we can implement. So I just put et cetera there. But yeah, I support adding this, you know, metric thing, you know, reform, review, reform, disband, abolish. I agree with that.
Awesome. Thank you all so much. I'm going to send the final language for this amendment in the chat. And I think technically I can't remember if we're in a motion to vote yet.
I can retract my dissent now. This is a good one.
Thank you, Layla. So now we have the official amendment that I just sent in the chat. I think we're technically supposed to move into voting now.
Yep. I'm going to ask for a motion to approve this by unanimous consent.
Motion to approve by unanimous consent.
Thank you. Can I get a second, please?
Second.
Cool. And then is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, I accept this amendment and I will ask for a motion to vote on the resolution as a whole.
Motion to vote by roll call.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Dissent.
Johan, can you please state your dissent?
Yeah, I would motion to vote by unanimous vote.
Layla, do you retract your motion?
Sure.
Okay. Is there a second to Johan's motion?
I will second that.
Second.
Okay. So we're going to move into voting. If anybody wants to dissent on this, please just raise your hand. And seeing no dissent, it's been passed by unanimous consent. So awesome. Kat, thank you for bringing this to the floor. It's really important. And I appreciate all the hard work and effort you singularly put into this. So thank you so much.
Thank you for chairing, Noah. And to every single member of the assembly, thank you so much for your support and your feedback in making sure this resolution is what it is. Alrighty, and also thank you to our community members who are here. Again, I appreciate your care. I know these are your communities, and I hope you understand that I'm acting out of a place of care for my community too, and the harm that's done to my community is resulting in, you know, deaths. So I apologize if that's somehow offensive to you. But otherwise, seeing as there's nothing left on the agenda, I would look favorably upon a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Thank you all. Right. Anybody in dissent? Alrighty. And again, thank you all so much. You're amazing. Have a good night.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.